Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know, when you're in it, it absolutely sucks. It absolutely sucks when you're in a rut like this. We're taking steps forward. You know, after the game, we took a step forward. Just in a way that a team should take a step forward when you're in a rut. I'll leave it at that.
Just in a bad spot right now. Not disappointed with the effort. Just in a bad spot. We got to try to figure it out. Just don't think the concentration to close the 48 minutes is there yet, which is unfortunate.
Defense is not about necessarily X's and O's, but it's about desire. It's about the intangibles of you just going after a ball. You paying attention to detail and getting up on the guy who's already made 3 3-point shots. Don't let him get his fourth. So I think this is what has transpired now. And I like what LeBron said. He was calm. He said, you know what? It's not about the effort. Now it's about the smarts of the game and not taking certain things for granted.
It starts with a film session. And the film session is watching when they were down in the NBA Finals last year. It wasn't their offense that got them the championship. It was the defense. It was Tristan Thompson being able to switch out to smaller guards and stay in front of them and contest shots. It was also other guys. J.R. Smith came back. I mean, he played tremendous defense the past 2 years. So it's about getting guys to recognize and see things that they've done. Sometimes as an athlete, as a player, all you need to do is see a little success in something that you did prior to this particular moment. And then it starts to, you know, seep in that, hey, no, I need to get back to that, because the offense will take care of itself.
Right.
You got enough weapons. It's not about the offense. It's about the defense. I'm watching the attention to detail.
For all the problems with things going as bad as they were 2 games in a row, our guys have had resilience and really, really fought. I'm really proud of them for that. I'd like us to play a lot better. Yeah, I'm happy to get the win.
It's been hard because I got to tell our players all the right things and get their minds in the right place. But every time I've got 5 minutes of quiet time, my mind just kind of races as to how lucky I am and how many people that are so much better than me at this that have taught me so much never had this opportunity.
We've got to control not having live ball turnovers, because if they get those turnovers and then get out and run, they're really, really efficient and effective on the break or in transition. And then it doesn't allow us to set up our defense in the half court, which has been pretty darn good all year, too.
If Carolina doesn't have a healthy Joel Berry, I think they could be in trouble. Oregon, you saw what they did against Kansas. They suffocated him. 1 for 15 shooting threes in the second half. Jordan Bell was a monster. Nobody even knows the kid's name. He was MVP. 8 block shots. He defended well. He had a double-double scoring and rebounding. We haven't even talked about Tyler Dorsey. He's averaging better than 20 a game. The all-around versatility of Dylan Brooks. I mean, that is a special team. North Carolina has to have their A game.
I think the key for Oregon is their guards have got to rebound the ball. Their guards have got to come back and rebound the ball. If they get down, they're a resilient group. They can drive it and get to the foul line and lengthen a game. And they've got a toughness about them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader on a Friday afternoon edition. And do you know what that means? Well, you should by now. It is a free-for-all Friday right here on the extravaganza. So many things to talk about, especially in this first hour. In this first hour, we are pretty much going to hit everything from the National Football League to a little bit on the National Basketball Association, a little bit on the Final Four, because most of our number two is going to be occupied with baseball, as we are now, of course, just a couple of days away from the start of the Major League Baseball season. Sunday, the opening games will be played. Everybody's going to be in action by the start of next week, and it is time for our 2017 Major League Baseball preview. So that'll be in the 4 o'clock hour. Zach Meisel will join us from Cleveland to talk about the Indians. Anthony Fenech will join us from Detroit to talk about the Tigers, and all of us, myself, along with Jim, I almost called you Frank Cushlin. You know what it is? You two guys together remind me of the former Colts coach. Remember Frank Cush?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Yeah, how about that? Because we got Frank Gargano in the studio and Jim Cushland producing the show, as always. So together they are Frank Cush. And so I'm probably going to do that more than once, I think.
It's
pretty obvious. All right, so we're going to do a lot of baseball, although we will also have a guest on the Final Four to wrap up the show, too. Alex Kirshner, Final Four preview, he writes on college basketball for SB Nation. So that'll all be coming up in the second hour of the program. So for the first hour, we have a lot of other things to get into. And it's kind of impossible not to start with the latest, I don't know what word we can use to describe the state of the defending champions. The state of disarray comes to mind. But the defending NBA champions are a hot freaking mess. It's not just, like I said yesterday, it's not just a blip on the radar screen. Oh, what was that? You know, blip, there was, now it's gone. It's not just some aberration. It's not an outlier. It's not a, you know, it's not just some passing phase. The Cavaliers are 500 basketball team since January. They're 500 team. They're 19-19. And they're not winning even with their big three back and healthy. They are a hot mess who cannot defend anybody. I kind of get the feeling that if I and my producer team of Frank Cush over there found two other guys on the street, be you, I kind of feel like we could go out there and put up a 25-point quarter against those guys. And I know that sounds extreme, but so is the horrific play that they have put forth on the defensive end. Last night, in yet another loss, and the streak and the run is just, I mean, it's too painful to detail, really. But last night in Chicago against the Bulls, the Cavaliers did what the Cavaliers only know how to do these days. They played atrociously on the defensive end of the floor. It was a close game at halftime. In the third quarter, they allowed the Chicago Bulls. Now, mind you, this is not the Chicago Bulls of Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, John Paxson, Steve Kerr, was it John or Jim Paxson? I think maybe it was Jim. I think I got the wrong Paxson.
John Paxson.
It was John. Thank you.
John Paxson.
Steve Kerr, Horace Grant. It's not even the Chicago Bulls of Derrick Rose from a few years ago when he was the MVP. It's the Chicago Bulls of Jimmy Butler and Pau Gasol, and it's the team that might be
Pau Gasol's not even there anymore, remember? He's over in San Antonio.
Not Pau Gasol, excuse me. Thank you very much for that. And oh, by the way, it's not even a Chicago Bulls team of Taj Gibson anymore because he left too.
And Dwayne Wade's hurt.
And Dwayne Wade's out, although that's a good thing. They were a below 500 team when Dwayne Wade played this season. They're over 500 without him.
Is that
something? They're better without him. And I think it's because they deferred too much to him instead of letting Jimmy Butler kind of, you know, run that show, so to speak. But at any rate, it wasn't even a deep playoff running Chicago Bulls team under Tom Thibodeau. This is Fred Hoiberg's Chicago Bulls. And they put up a 37-point quarter in the third quarter to run away and take a big lead against the Cavaliers that they would not relinquish. We are talking about not some sort of a passing moment in time. This is who they are. It is what they are, and it's the last day of March. We are talking about playoff time right around the corner. There's eight games left for them for the first couple of weeks of April, and then we're into the playoffs. And they look as bad, I think, as they have been with LeBron James in a Cavaliers uniform. Since perhaps 2003, 2004, when he started this thing, his rookie year. That's how bad they look. And it's inexcusable to say that it is so, given the amount of talent on that team. Given the first-team All-NBA, if not MVP, and he won't be the MVP, LeBron James, multi-time All-Star Kyrie Love, multi-time All-Star, Kyrie Irving, multi-time All-Star Kevin Love.
Well, they are both multi-time All-Stars.
That's very true. They are. And since I was doing Frank Cush, I guess I might as well do Kyrie Love and Kevin Irving. Why not? Sharpshooter J.R. Smith, who is healthy now. Rebounder extraordinaire Tristan Thompson. I mean, they have enough talent. They have enough depth. They still don't have the shot blocker they want. And I don't know what they're going to do about working Larry Sanders into that whole thing or not. But they don't. But beyond that, they have most of what they had last year when they won the championship. and they're a 500 basketball team. It is a wreck. The big question on ESPN Radio today has been, if you've been listening, the question has been, which is more likely? And I heard this on Mike and Mike this morning, and then I also heard the dudes over on First Take doing this morning, too. Same question. And I'll ask it now, although I'm not going to spend as much time on it as they did. Which is more likely if you had to put money on it? Frank and Jim, did you guys hear this question this morning?
Go ahead with it, but...
Which is more likely if you had to put some significant amount of money on it, if you were a gambler? And I'm not a gambler, so this is all hypothetical. Is it more likely that the Cavaliers defend their championship and win and defeat the Golden State Warriors and win their second straight championship? Or is it more likely that they don't get out of the Eastern Conference and they don't even make the finals? That either Washington or Boston or Toronto takes them out.
And given that those are the two choices,
choose makes the finals loses.
Right.
And it's either don't get there at all or they win it all.
And
which is most likely?
And given that that's the how the question is worded, to me it would be more. I would put it down right now with those two options on losing to somebody in the East.
I would too, Frank.
Yeah, same thing. I mean. They gave up 28 points to Nikola Mirotic. Are you kidding me? Seriously.
No, I know. Believe me, I watched it too. I couldn't believe my eyes either on that.
Actually, the thing that annoyed me so much, Bob, is I know Chicago's not a good overall shooting team. The numbers will bear that out. But they gave up 22 and 19 to the Bulls in the first and second quarter. I'm thinking, okay, that's somewhat acceptable. You actually held an opponent to under 20 points in a quarter. What annoys me most about this game is that third quarter that you're pointing out, when they get outscored 37-21. So they go from up 9 to down 7.
Exactly.
Just in that one quarter. Usually the championship type teams, and this goes to almost any era really in basketball. If you're a championship-quality team, you know what happens in the third quarter? You usually dominate, not get dominated. That's what
exactly
annoyed me
right.
about this game. Because
not this team.
Defensively, they're still bad, but they actually held somebody to 100 points. So I'm not going to bash the defense too much today. That's an ongoing problem.
Yeah, but I am because of the fact that they let the game get away from them in the third quarter. And again, we need to point this out. They did so against the Chicago Bulls.
Yep.
Now, mind you, the last time they got rolled with a terrible defensive effort was against the Spurs.
Sure.
And you heard LeBron James say afterwards, well, that's a well-oiled machine, you know. And if you're not going right, and of course the Cavs are not going right now, if you're in a bad place, a team like that can exploit you all over the place. But that's the Spurs, a well-oiled machine.
Right.
This is Mirotic, along with Butler and Lopez and an aged Rajon Rondo.
Who had 15 assists and 9 rebounds, and some days I thought I literally openly questioned, is he still on the Bulls right now?
Yeah, no kidding, huh? I mean, this is a very, very mediocre to poor roster. I mean, I give them credit for being within a couple of games of 500, the Bulls, to be honest with you. But from the roster standpoint, the Cavaliers shouldn't be giving up 37 points and a quarter to them. They were outscored 16 points in the third quarter. That's unacceptable. So forget about, you know, the fact, hey, they held somebody under 100. Doesn't matter. When you are as offensively disjointed as they are right now, and they are, Kyrie Irving was 7 out of 20. He's shooting 35% in his last three games. He's off kilter somehow, some way. He had 20 points. He only had 3 assists. That is unacceptable. He's having a much, much better year in passing the basketball and getting assists. Kevin Love had a terrible game, shot 3 of 10 and fouled out way too early. He had 8 points and 10 rebounds. You know, LeBron was 11 out of 20, had 26 points and 10 boards and 8 assists. Pretty solid overall effort for LeBron James, but he got no support. J.R. Smith finally shot the ball better. 4 out of 7 from 3. Remember, he's been struggling mightily since coming back with the injury to his shooting hand. So he finally got it going. But, you know, Jefferson wasn't available or didn't play anyway. Darren. Who didn't play? Which D.
Derek
Williams
didn't play. Darren did.
Darren did. That's right, because I saw him on the floor. Derek did not play. And Shumpert, of course, was just Shumpert. He's just not very productive. He played 22 minutes, scored 4 points, had 1 assist and 2 rebounds. My point is, they are offensively not in a position to be giving up 37-point quarters to anybody. And the problem is, they seem to think that's a way to play, the game right now at this stage of the season. We don't have to defend. We'll just outscore you because we do have a ton of scorers. Truth be told, they do, especially when Korver is healthy and in the lineup. They do have a ton of scorers. But you don't win championships, and quite frankly, this is the first step on the road to championships. Finishing strong in the regular season, getting your top seed, making sure you're at home and in your own bed for games 1 and 2, not on the road in some hotel in some other city for in games 1 and 2, in not just one but possibly 2 playoff series. And then if it comes down to it, to brass tacks, playing in somebody else's building in game 7, you don't want to do that. I know Maniloff yesterday, when we talked about it, minimized that. I think that's extraordinarily much more important than he does, and a lot of other people do.
And I'm with you on that.
So this is the start of your defense of your championship, and you can't just say defense doesn't matter. Defense does matter, and they don't play it, and they didn't play it again last night. It's won the Spurs, it's won the Warriors, it's won the, I don't know, another high-scoring team. This is Chicago Bulls, and the Chicago Bulls are not the Chicago Bulls that that a lot of people sometimes associate with that team's name. Look at their roster. So very, very disappointing last night as far as the Cavs. So I completely agree. I am much more on the side of they're not coming out of the East than they're going to win the championship, if those are your only two choices. Now, having said all of that, I kind of wanted to throw another very interesting question, and feel free to answer it at 866-240-1065. Like I said, it's a free-for-all Friday. And if you want to change gears, by the way, and talk about something else, you can do that. But last night, there was a little bit of history made in that loss by the Cavaliers, the defending NBA champions, to the Chicago Bulls. And that was LeBron James passing the big loquacious, passing Shaquille O'Neal for 7th place on the all-time NBA scoring list. And I found that very interesting. Congratulations to Shaquille O'Neal. But it kind of begs the question, huh? He's 7th all-time, is LeBron James right now. He is trailing number 6, Dirk Nowitzki, number 5, Wilt Chamberlain, number 4, Michael Jordan, number 3, Kobe Bryant, number 2, Karl Malone, and of course, number 1 is the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's 32 years old. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played into his late 30s. Can LeBron James play into his late 30s? Can he play another 5 or 6 years, get up to, say 37 and 38, and continue to average 25 points a game? Because I heard the stat this morning on Mike and Mike that if he plays through the 2022 season at 25 points per game, he would pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Now, he'd be 37 years old then. No, 38 years old. Hold on. Through the 2022 season or to the 20? I think it was through the 2022 season.
Right, so this would be 2021-22.
Right, so in this season, 2016-17, he's 32, so he'll be 33 in 18, 34, 19, 35, in 20, 36. So he'll be 37 in that season.
Okay.
All right. Can he still average 25 points a game in order to do that? Because that's what it would that's what it would take, him averaging 25 points a game in order to do that. And pass Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the all-time scoring list. And the question about whether the Cavaliers are more likely to get bounced in the Eastern Conference before getting to the finals or win the whole thing made me kind of come up with my own version of that question with LeBron James. And here's my question. Do you think LeBron James is more likely, having now passed Shaquille O'Neal, do you think he is more likely to catch Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and become the NBA's all-time scoring leader? Or more likely to catch Michael Jordan and win 6 NBA championships? He's got 3. He would need obviously 3 more in that span of whatever it's going to be. If he plays to 37, 38, whatever age it is, he'd have to win 3 of the next 5 then in order to make that happen. Which is more likely, that he catches Kareem in points or catches Michael in titles or neither?
Oh, we get neither as an option for this one?
I don't know. Like I said, I was just kind of bouncing it around my own skull as I heard that stat earlier today, and it made me wonder. And here's the reason it made me wonder. The guys on First Take were kicking this around a little bit. And Max said that he thinks he will do it by accident because he just can't help but score a ton of points. Stephen A. Smith said he doesn't think he'll do it because it's not important to him because he's never been a scorer by nature. It's not his first thing he does. And so since he doesn't care about such things, he would never do it. And that's what got me to bouncing this around my own skull. Because I thought to myself, I disagree. I think he is driven to do it. Because he has already said about a year ago, if you remember what he said, with respect to the Mount Rushmore question,
yeah,
with respect to the greatest of all time question, could he ever be the GOAT? He said that he's chasing a ghost. The ghost being somebody, he's competing with a ghost, the ghost that is no longer playing. The record has been set. The established title of greatest of all time has already been bestowed upon Michael Jordan. So he said basically he's chasing Michael Jordan. That's what prompted my personal question here, because he's right. And if he's chasing Michael Jordan as the greatest of all time, and that's what he wants to be remembered as, if he's thinking from a legacy standpoint, which he clearly is, which is it more likely to get him there? He would have to either match Mike in titles by winning six, and if he can't do that, the only other way he could exceed Michael is to outscore him and to outscore everybody and say, well, Mike might have had more titles, but I'm the greatest scorer in the history of the National Basketball Association. I think when you are driven by legacy as much as LeBron James is, as he has admitted that he is, if he doesn't feel like he can win three more rings, that is going to be next on his list. And that is going to be, I've got to be the all-time scorer in the history of this game. I've got to pass Mike, Kobe, and Kareem. So which is most likely? Let's take the neither away. If it's one of those two things, which is more likely? Jim, Frank, either one of you guys, is it that he gets six rings? And I'm not even saying exceeds Michael and gets seven.
We're just saying
but matches
six.
It. Yeah. Because again, he's talked about, you know, chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan, even though he's still alive, so that's kind of mean. Is it more likely that he catches him and gets that sixth, or that he can't catch him there, but he's going to make up for it in another way, and he's going to be the all-time leading scorer?
Right now, especially if you take the neither out of your question, I lean towards the points. On the grounds that I think, barring some massive injury, which of course has never happened yet in his career, that he'll play to that age. And whether it's in Cleveland or somewhere else, if LeBron James is on your team, you expect to do things. He's not just there just to bring in, you know, butts to the seats. If it's somewhere, say, other than Cleveland, for example, he's still there to play big time minutes and, you know, average similar things than what he's doing now. It's not like he's 37. He's going to go to the Lakers and come off the bench. Nothing like that would ever happen. You know, so I think barring a massive injury, he is very likely to play to that age. So I think take the neither out. I think the points is a little more likely than the rings. Although, to be fair, for both this question and the other, if neither was an option, neither would be my answer for both.
What about you, Frank Argano?
Man, that's a tough question, Bob. That's a really tough question. Like, I'm having a hard time really deciding. I'm leaning towards the points just because, and I do agree with what Stephen A. said. I don't think scoring is LeBron's ultimate what he cares about. He does like to spread the wealth on the court. He's great with assists and whatnot. But I think that's more likely right now. I don't see it, like Kush said, I don't see him late in his career bouncing around to other teams and being a supporting cast member just because LeBron's ego gets in the way of something like that. So I would have to take the points.
Very good arguments on both sides, or from both of you guys, I mean. I'm leaning toward the championships.
Really?
In truth, I'm leaning toward neither. But if I took that out, right, since I did, I have to pick one or the other. I'm leaning toward the championships. And here's why. I don't think he has the game to score 39,000 career points late in his career.
Or said another way, he needs like 11,000 more from right now.
Right. And the reason why is look at how LeBron James scores. Look at what has made him what he is. He is a phenomenally dynamic physical presence. He's a guy who slashes and crashes to the basket and scores on and ones and has power moves and glides and dunks, all of which tend to become harder and harder to do as you get into your mid-30s, let alone into your late-30s, which is where he would be. Everybody's athleticism starts to drag them down. Everybody's legs start to go. And so what do the great players late in their careers who are great scorers have to rely upon? They got to rely upon outside shooting. Or if you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you were still thrown in that skyhook from 15 feet until you were 40 or 41 or whatever it was that he played to.
Right.
You could still throw that in. You could just stand there on the block, wait for the ball, turn around. Nobody can block a skyhook that you have perfected as an art form for the last 25 years, and you can still just float that in. I don't think LeBron James, who is a much better jump shooter this year, I will say that, he has become a much better outside threat, a three-point threat this year than he has been in previous years, including MVP years, including championship years. It is better. He's not a natural shooter. He's not a guy like Ray Allen who can just, you know, play late in my career and all I got to do is spot up, catch it, and flick it, and boom, 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 and keep the point totals going up. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is, unless he increases his shot volume a lot, and that's not his game, it never has been,
right,
as we talked about, he is a tremendous passer, averaging more than 8 assists a game this year. It's one of the things that makes him dangerous is that Magic Johnson quality of his. He's never been the pure scorer. He's been the pure player, and scoring goes with that. But once the legs start to go and once the athleticism starts to go and once the ability to get to the basket against much younger and stronger defenders, once that starts to become a reality for LeBron James and he's relying upon the outside game, I just don't trust that he's got the stroke to average 25 points a game for the next 5 years. Like I said, that he would have to do that. Or if you extend it out, let's say he can play until he's 40. He's got to play 8 years then. I don't think he can average 20 points a game in 8 years, those 8 years. I think it will diminish a little bit, probably maybe not at 35, but 36, 37, and yep, certainly once you're past that, when you have relied upon your body to be your primary weapon for as long as you have, and not your just skill at outside shooting, I just think it starts to drop, and I think he would run out of time. I just think he would run out of time. And by the way, those legs, as we know, his legs at 36 and 37 are not like Michael Jordan's legs at that age or Kobe Bryant's. Kobe Bryant's would be much more similar because I was going to say because of college. Michael Jordan played in college. You know, Karl Malone played in college. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played in college. When they're 38, 39, you know, their years at ages 18, 19, 20, 21, you're only playing about 30 games a year because they're college. LeBron's been playing 82 a year since he was 18, not to mention all of the playoffs and the runs to the finals. He has at least 2 more seasons on his legs just in the number of playoff games that he has played.
Yep, which is another thing Jordan doesn't have as much. Remember, early in his career, they were a low seed and couldn't get out of the first round.
That's right.
For example.
So not only did he have a lighter load in his younger years because he was in college, playing
right,
a college schedule, in his early NBA years, he didn't play as deep into the playoffs. So the point being, when LeBron is 37, his legs are going to feel 39. When LeBron is 38, his legs are going to 40, et cetera, et cetera. And when it comes down to that, you're going to have to find a way to score from the outside where you don't have as much physical resistance. Physical resistance from a defender the way you do the way he plays the game now. He gets defended all the time, and he's got to blow by guys or power over guys or drive through guys or whatnot. So that's just an interesting question I thought from last night because I watched the game. I saw, you know, the history being made, the passing of Shaquille O'Neal, the cute little sketch they did too on TNT with Shaq smashing up the, you know, the break room or behind the stage or whatever it is that you want to call it.
Because it was on TNT and he's part of the TNT crew, so exactly, of course they could.
It was cute. It was fun. But we saw that happen, and like I said, when everybody's wondering, do you think the Cavs will get out of the first – or will get out of the Eastern Conference, or will they win the whole thing, I just thought I'd throw my own in. I'm going to put it up on Twitter, too, after I take a timeout. I'm going to put it up on Twitter. Check it out for yourself and cast a vote there. What do you think is more likely, that LeBron catches Mike in titles or that he passes Kareem in points? And maybe we'll throw the other one up as well. All right. You also know what else is going on in less than 1 week. Next Thursday, you realize the Masters begins at Augusta, a tradition unlike any other. You know what else is going to be a new tradition unlike any other? Playing fantasy golf while watching the Masters. If you like watching the big tournaments and winning money, then for goodness sakes, get on FanDuel.com and play fantasy golf and double your fun. All right. Pick 8 golfers for your team. Stay under the salary cap. You got to have, you know, salary cap limitations. And then you'll score points with all your golfers for their eagles, their birdies, their pars, and more. And you know what? You can play for as little as a dollar. That's right. There are tons of contests for everyone to choose from. Watch your score live and win cash prizes. Get that golf lineup in before tee off on Thursday morning. And by the way, speaking of lineups, get those in for Sunday, opening day for Major League Baseball. That's right. Daily Fantasy Baseball is back at FanDuel.com. Don't miss the $500,000 MLB Super Rally Contest with $100,000 for first place. Here's what you've got to do for either baseball or golf. To get started, new users like you will get FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack valued at up to $50 for free. That's right. 5 free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. Just finish in the top half to win cash. To get your 5 free entries, go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and enter the promo code France. That's me. Spell it right or you don't get credit for it. FRANTZ. You will not get your free $50 with the right code, without the right code. FRANTZ at FanDuel.com. Void where prohibited. All right, we're going to get a timeout now. I'm going to throw those questions up on Twitter. We'll come back and maybe take your phone calls on it at 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket.
Right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
What is wrong with all these sister kissers these days? We talked about this yesterday about the MVP in the National Basketball Association, and you got people saying, split it. It's a tie. James Harden and Russell Westbrook are co-MVPs. You know, what is that crap? Stop that. Pick someone. And the reason I ask is I just posted the question on our Twitter feed right during the break, during that Sports Center. Which is more likely, that LeBron James passes Kareem in total points, needs 11,000 plus, or catches Michael Jordan with 6 rings, needs 3? And one of the first replies I got is from Jeff Wilson, tweeting from @whiteplate14. He writes, neither. His body will start wearing down, and if he wants 3 more rings, he will have to be another super team put together for him to join. Come on, Jeff. Hit us up with a real answer here. Cast a vote in the poll. I put the survey right up there. It's a
not to mention, this is the reason you took the neither out of your question and didn't include it in the other one because, quite frankly, as I just said to you when we were talking about this before the break, if neither was an option on both questions, that would be my answer.
All of us.
But that's not a good answer. Making it either or is to make yourself decide.
I don't know that that's true on the first one, by the way. I don't know that I would have picked neither if it was a choice on the Cavaliers one.
I still think they're going to be in the finals but lose.
I am starting to think that if they continue to jerk around like this in the last 8 games, they're going to not have the number 1 seed and they're going to lose a playoff series to either Washington or Boston. That's where I'm leaning. I'm not saying I'd put a ton of money on it. But if I had to pick one or the other, and I do for this question, that's where I am. And even if you gave me neither, I think I still might pick no. I am that disillusioned by their defense. They might come out of their shooting slumps, but defense should never be in this kind of a slump.
You're right.
And so I am disillusioned. I don't think they're coming out of the East as of today on March 31st. Now, in their last 8 games, they might somehow find it and say, wow, okay, now that's what I'm talking about. Now I don't think anybody will beat them in the Eastern Conference, and we'll see what happens in the finals. But as of today, I don't think they're coming out of the East, and I would stay with that one. But to your point, yes, I took neither off the board for both of those questions because I want you to pick one.
Yeah.
Which is more likely, that they will lose in the Eastern Conference playoffs and not make the finals at all, or they'll not only make the finals but win the damn thing? back-to-back,
right.
Repeat. No neither. And then the second one with LeBron, no neither. So stop trying to vote neither. I didn't even put it up there as an option. I just said one or the other, pass Kareem or catch Michael. So those questions are all up right now on our Twitter feed, which is Sports Radio 106.5. That's real fine, Sports Radio 106.5. Matt is in Toledo, and you are now on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. It's a free-for-all Friday. Matt, what's shaking? How are you?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
Good.
Well, I had a couple comments about what you guys were just talking about LeBron, his legs being 2 years older than Jordan when he was that age.
Yeah, but, pretty much more than anybody just because of the crazy number of playoff games he's played.
And I'll give you the amount of games, but let's also forget, they don't even know how to spell the word defense anymore. He never had to play against an Anthony Mason. He never had to play against a Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman. Michael Jordan took an absolute beating throughout his career at 6'6", not 6'9", 260, 6'6", 220. I mean, I don't know. And plus, taking games off like LeBron does, Michael Jordan never took a game off. I'm just, obviously, you can tell I'm a huge Jordan fan, and I got a lot of people.
Okay, listen. Two things. First of all, very good point on the style of the game that was played then compared to now. Michael's body took a tougher beating, no question. Everybody's body took tougher. Ask Isaiah Thomas, and he was on a team that beat everybody else up.
I agree, but the Knicks, like you mentioned,
with Oakley and Mason and all the wars he had, even with, people don't think that the Celtics were very physical with McHale and Parrish and Bird, and that's a lie, too. Believe me, there was a lot of physicality that those guys had to deal with. So your point is well taken on that one. What was the second thing you said? I had a thought on that.
Oh, I just said, I'm just like the resting, the way the players rest.
Well, now keep in mind, every game he doesn't play, yes, it gives him rest, but it's another game he loses 25 points. If we're talking about trying to catch Kareem, it's total points, not average.
So
every time he sits out, it's another game he doesn't have a chance to put 25 more up. You do that 6, 7, 8 times, it's 8 times, that's 200 points less that you have that season if you are a 25-point-a-game scorer. And so now it's a little harder to get to that 11,000 if you're giving up a few hundred points a year.
I agree. I think he has a better chance of catching Jordan than he does because I think that he'll get frustrated like he did his first go around in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think he'll get frustrated. He'll either A, leave, or he'll B, they'll make changes. I mean, they've got three stud players with Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Kevin Love can't stay healthy, but you got to play with the cards you dealt with too. So
yeah, you're right. And I'll tell you what, he's in such a perfect situation for that because, The salary cap expanding the way it has last year, and I think it's supposed to do it again next year, right?
I believe so, yes.
Not as severe, but yes.
But isn't that what has given him the natural excuse for not signing a long-term 5 or 6 year contract to finish his career with the Cavs? He can sign 1 year at a time with the excuse being, I'm not thinking about leaving, but I just want a new max deal every year because the contract is going up. The max contract amount is going up. The salary cap is expanding. And so because his excuse is the salary cap, it gives him the accidental or coincidental situation where if things aren't going the way he wants them to go, if he's not seeing the progress he wants to see with his team where he can get back to the finals year after year, he can indeed say, I'm going to go join Durant and Curry and go play and win 2 more rings out west. There is something like that that I'm not saying he would do, but something he could do because he's on a series of one-year contracts.
I agree. And that's why I think he has a better chance of getting to 6.
So do I.
Than he does of beating Kareem. And I agree with what you said. He's not a great jump shooter. I mean, he is by far, which I agree with earlier, the most physically gifted player with his size, speed, athletic ability that I've ever seen play the game.
Probably ever, yeah. Probably ever.
To me, I've also seen him completely shut down and quit on his team, which I can name off a lot of. Kobe Bryant never did that, and I'm not a big Kobe Bryant fan. Michael never did that. I mean, that's to me why he would, in my opinion, would never be considered even in the top five as far as a total player.
I got to ask you this, though, Matt, because I wouldn't be a very good host if I didn't catch you on this and then not bring it up.
Okay.
When you say that he quit on his team sometimes, and Michael never did, Didn't Michael quit on his team for two god doggone seasons?
I'm talking about during a game.
I know, talking about in the middle of a run that could have been eight championships. It could have been a historic eight. He quit in the middle of his career on his team and left the city of Chicago two rings lighter than what they should have been.
See, now you had to bring that up.
Like I said, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't notice that.
That had more to do with the shock of his father, and I just think that he was just still, you know, just in shock when his dad was killed that summer, and he wanted to see his dad win his last championship. His dad always loved baseball. He wanted to try that.
Yeah, I know. I've heard all the stories, and I saw the 30 for 30 of him in the Birmingham bus. Boy, I know the whole story. But to me, it's something I'll never understand. Even though I watched it and I listened to people closest to him explain it and try to explain it, I'll still never quite understand how somebody at the peak of his powers, with three straight championships, and I know that maybe you have to experience something like that, because I did experience the death of both of my parents, and everybody reacts differently to certain circumstances like that. But to me, I'll never understand how he could walk away from his career like that. Just to do that to baseball.
I agree with you. So, I agree with you.
All right. Hey, Matt, I got to run, brother. Thanks for the call. Great chat. Let's go to Daryl, who's also in Toledo on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Daryl, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
I was calling about the LeBron thing. I don't think he's going to catch Kareem, or he'll get the six rings, because he's already wearing out and saying he needs help all the time, and he's not scoring. He's trying to facilitate the basketball all the time. So I don't see him winning either one.
Know what? Even while not scoring, as you're calling it, he's still averaging 26 a game. You know what I mean? It's only two less than his best years. He's still scoring 26 a game while, as you say, facilitating more.
Right. I don't know. I just don't think that he's, to me, he's as mental as tough as he could be. He could be having more points, because if he, instead of getting other players to come join him, he could up his own game and raise his point average, like Westbrook is in Oklahoma. He's not crying and he don't got help.
Russell Westbrook doesn't want to help, though. Russell Westbrook likes what he's doing. He likes being able to take 24 shots a game. LeBron has never been that guy. LeBron will shoot 18 times, 19 times a game, and facilitate and set people up like other people. He's not a natural, go attack and score guy like a guy like Russell Westbrook is.
Right. And to go off the subject, what do you think about the Silver, the NBA commissioner, pushing for a female coach? I'm like, why does there have to be a female coach in the NBA for when you go to the women's sports and the men have less coaching jobs than the women?
Is that true?
Like the PGA, the LPGA, men, it's in the rule book, men can't join the LPGA and tee off, but in the PGA, they can let women in.
I don't want to cross over from individual sports like golf and into basketball. Let's stay in basketball.
Okay.
I don't know the number, but when I think of women's college basketball, which is of course kind of your next correlation here, I guess, to what we're talking about, of all the women's teams there, I don't know what is the percentage of men versus women. For some reason, I want to say it's probably close to 50-50, with the most successful of all of them being Geno, a male in at UConn.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too, probably 50-50 now.
To answer your question, I talked about this a couple days ago too, Daryl. To me, Adam Silver being, a very, very progressive politician. He is a very politically active guy, and I think he sees it as his job. In fact, he used the word job to add as much diversity to the NBA as possible, and in his case, because it's already very diverse in terms of ethnicity and race, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
The only thing he is left to do for him is to say, let's break women's barriers now and get a woman coach in charge of an NBA team. And he somehow seems to think that that's a priority.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong if an NBA GM wants to hire a woman head coach at all. That's up to them.
Either.
But I don't see why the commissioner has to say it's my priority. I don't get that.
Right. And I don't think it'll work that far. I mean, some guys don't even respect the women as it is already, and the players are already running the league. They ran black out of Cleveland. What are they going to do with a woman? I mean, is she going to be ranting and raving? They start changing their clothes in the locker room because she makes a mess, and they just start getting naked, and what is she going to do?
Yeah, there's all kinds of potentials for conflicts there. You're right. I talked about this in some depth. And, Daryl, thanks for the call, brother. Appreciate it. I got to run here. I'm coming up on 4 o'clock. I talked about this in some depth a couple of days ago, and I agree. And I'm not saying it's right if the players try to run her off because she's a woman, but you're talking about young 20-something and sometimes late teenagers, obviously, coming in first year out of college. But 20-something year-old egotistical millionaires who are used to having things a certain way that don't adapt very well to change. And having a female head coach, you know, barking at them, they just might not have that respect. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not being sexist here. But I'm just saying it's reality. Might not be right, but it's real. And I think it's probably would be a hard thing for someone like that to accomplish. Okay, we're going to get a timeout here for the top of the hour Sports Center as promised. And also as promised, we're going to talk a little baseball in the next hour because the Major League Baseball season begins on Sunday, and it's time for a little preview. Zach Meisel from Cleveland on the Indians, Anthony Fenech from Detroit on the Tigers, both joining us next hour as we get you set for baseball right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
To left field, in the corner it goes, it is hooking, and that ball is gone! It's a grand slam for Ian Kinsler!
First pitch to Ian Kinsler, hammered to left, and trouble, that's a fair ball, three-run home run!
There's a fly ball to left off the bat of Kinsler, this one's got a chance, and this ball is gone, a home run!
Swing and a miss, Verlander, strikeout 10 against the Marlins. There's a wave and a miss, and there's a strikeout.
He'd be a really good catcher for a long time.
And down he goes, swing and a miss, he chased the high, he swing and a miss, he struck him out.
Best fastball of the afternoon.
Swing and a miss, struck him out.
97 with his final pitch of the night.
That ball's hammered deep to right field, way back and gone. Miguel Cabrera has gone deep. High drive deep into right field, that ball is going to the track, it's going to the wall, and it's over the wall. It's an opposite field home run for Miguel Cabrera.
To get one by Kipnis, who says no sir. Two down.
Good play.
Kipnis hammers one high and deep on the right field line. If it's fair, it's gone. Goodbye. Jason Kipnis gets the Indians on the board with a long home run. Fastball drill. Deep right. Reimold out of room. It's out of here and we're tied at four. Jason Kipnis with his seventh home run of the year. Struck him out, and this one's in the books. A 4-0 complete game shutout for Corey Kluber. Lindor drives it deep center field. Goodbye! Francisco Lindor puts the Indians in front 8-7 with his third home run of the year. And a line drive, right field base hit. It's down. It'll go to the wall. Michael Martinez scores the tying run. Lindor around second. On his way to third, he is saved. It's an RBI triple for Francisco Lindor, who has electrified this Lindor tag. He's coming home. Here's the throw. Indians win it again. Back to back. Walk-off wins for the Tribe.
Barring anything unexpected or something unforeseen over the next few days, we inform Yandy Diaz and Michael Martinez that they will make the opening day roster.
Like Chris said, it was hard. I mean, we had full-fledged meetings. We had conversations in the morning that seemed like they turned into meetings. There are some unknowns right now, but we worked through it together.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, rolling onward, are we ready on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket? How do we ring in the 2017 baseball season, which starts on Sunday across Major League Baseball? Everybody in action at the beginning of the week. How better to do it than to remind us how things went in 2016? The Indians are the defending American League champions, coming within, one inning, the 10th inning of the 7th game of the World Series from being the world champions for the first time since 1948. Will they take that next step forward and actually win the whole thing this time around, or will something derail them on their way to yet another division championship and potential World Series run? Our good friend Zach Meisel joining us from Cleveland, Ohio. He is with the Northeast Ohio Media Group. He has been covering the Indians all spring long out in Goodyear, Arizona, with a little MLB preview for us. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. How's it going?
I'm excited. I'm very excited. You know, it's so much more so than a year ago, and I know that just makes me a typical fan like everybody else. You know, something good happens, and, oh, I can't wait to do it again. And if you're coming off of something disappointing, you're like, yawn, we'll see what happens. But, boy, I'm not going to wait until midsummer to get excited. I'm going to be excited from the very start, and I suspect that that's the feeling of the fans out there in Cleveland your way as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think back to a year ago and there were questions about the Indians' offense. Would they be able to score enough runs? And they ended up being second in the American League in that category. We thought the Tigers were going to be and the Royals were going to be the cream of the crop in the Central, and it didn't quite pan out that way. So it's just interesting how much can change over the course of a year. And you think back to the Indians' season, and they had that 14-game winning streak that was kind of defined the summer, and it was a lot of fun. It came right on the heels of the Cavs championship. And then they had the postseason run when everyone counted them out after all the injuries to the rotation. So it's weird because you just have no idea what your team's going to look like 6 months from now. And sometimes it's completely different, and sometimes that's a good thing and it can help you. Sometimes it's a bad thing. Sometimes you think it's a bad thing, like was the case last year with the Indians, and it turns out to be a good thing. So it's baseball's funny. It has a way of making us all look foolish. And even in a year like this where it seems like it's pretty easy to say the Indians, the Red Sox are at the top of the American League, the Cubs, Nationals, and Dodgers are at the top of the National League. But, you know, it's we all end up looking like idiots one way or another.
Zach, you wrote yesterday for your publication and for Cleveland.com, and then you did your podcast with some of your fellow writers about whether or not it is World Series or bust for the Indians in 2017. Is that the feeling in the clubhouse? Is it, look how close we were. We had the tying run on base when the final out of the 10th inning of the 7th game of the World Series was made. Nothing less than getting back to that moment and then hopefully exceeding it is acceptable. Is that the mindset?
Yeah, I think there's two ways to look at it. I think you can say that because, look, everyone in that clubhouse, if they don't win the World Series, there's going to be disappointment. They didn't win the World Series last year, and even though they were really proud of what they accomplished, given all the injuries and the adversity they faced, there was still disappointment because they were that close. They had a 3-1 lead, and they didn't close the door. So, I think that's true. It would be... It's a bust if you don't win the World Series, but you have to look at the bigger picture here. And this isn't like this is an old, aging team, and they're in position to win one, and that's going to be it. I mean, they have a window here of several years where your goal is to win the World Series. The problem with baseball is where we could say last year the Cavs had a cakewalk to the NBA Finals, and it was just a matter of whether they could beat the Warriors four times. And so if they didn't win the championship, of course that year would have been a bust. With the Indians, with baseball, it's different because it really depends who's playing well 6 months from now, and it's always a toss-up. So while I do think it's World Series or bust, I think there's a little bit more leeway for a Major League Baseball team, especially the Indians, who should be in this position for the next couple of years. And that being said, though, we've seen it before where it looks like a team has a chance to be a dynasty or a chance at some longevity at the top of the league, and things crumble. You have injuries, you have trades, you have just stuff happens where it doesn't pan out that way. And after a couple of years, they have to reverse course and think about what could have been. So you certainly want to capitalize, and the Indians definitely have a good chance to do that.
One last thing on last year, and then I'm going to ask you what you expect this year. Do you think that the Cavaliers championship gave the Indians a bit of a pass for blowing a 3-1 lead? You know, we in Cleveland, Cleveland fans and any fans really of the Cavaliers from all over the country, but in Cleveland and Northern Ohio, we mocked the Warriors because they had a 3-1 lead and they were cocky and they blew the lead. And then, of course, you know, a few months later, the Indians have a 3-1 lead over the mighty, mighty Cubs. And they didn't get cocky, I don't think anybody would say, but they blew the lead. And I think under normal circumstances, it would have been devastating, heartbreaking, far worse than Jose Mesa 1997 to have blown a 3-1 lead the way they did. But everybody was still flying so high and riding the cloud of a Cavaliers championship that maybe they kind of got a pass on that. Do you think that the damage was mitigated somewhat by the fact that they had just had the Cavs?
I do. I don't think that point has been pushed across enough. Those Warriors 3-1 jokes died pretty quickly in early November. And it's interesting because it's hard to look at this without and just take a stance. I mean, kudos to the Indians for what they accomplished last year with no Michael Brantley, no Carlos Carrasco, not much Danny Salazar, and 9/10 of Trevor Bauer. No one picked them to beat Boston. No one picked them to beat Toronto, and no one picked them to beat the Cubs. And they almost did all three. So it's easy to look at it to take one side, and then there are a lot of fans and a lot of people in other cities who say the Indians blew a 3-1 lead, and that's the end of the story. But then there are some who say, what a valiant effort, and that's the end of the story. And I think you need to consider both sides of the coin here, in that Cleveland fans were riding high. And it was when you saw Rajay Davis hit the home run and you look up on the scoreboard and there's LeBron James pumping his fists and, yeah, and flexing and all excited. I mean, it was Cleveland's year, and it was so out of the norm where it didn't seem like reality. So I think it kind of like overshadowed things, just what a role the city was on. And now, you know, it's funny. I've talked to fans who the second the Indians fell short, it was like the Cavs championship hadn't happened either. And it was like back to the old Cleveland way of thinking with just pessimism. What's going to go wrong next? Woe is us. And it was amazing to me because I wonder how much winning is necessary to completely overshadow the 52 years that preceded the Cavs winning the title.
Zach Meisel is our guest in a little preview of Major League Baseball 2017. All right, so let's get there. You said it correctly that a year ago we were thinking the Indians had maybe the deepest pitching staff, starting staff in the American League, and one of the deepest in baseball. But it would be a battle with the Tigers and the Royals for supremacy in the American League Central. It didn't materialize that way. The Royals really kind of faded. The Tigers never really were what they thought they were going to be, and the Indians exceeded expectations despite some of those injuries, despite the Brantley story and more. So going into 2017, if the arms are all there, and it looks like they are with Kluber and Carrasco and Salazar and Tomlin and Bauer, your first five, a much improved bullpen because of now a full season with Andrew Miller, and Michael Brantley, oh, by the way, is back and swinging the bat, at least in spring training, like the silver slugger he was 2 years ago, and maybe the most productive hitter available in free agency, Edwin Encarnacion, not just this past year, but maybe the most productive of the last 5 years, is now in the middle of your lineup. Is it easier to say that, yes, this is going to be a title defense in the Central?
Yeah, I mean, you can really nitpick and find things wrong with the Indians roster, which, by the way, will include Michael Brantley on opening day.
Which is amazing.
It's hard. They have depth in every, I mean, the bullpen, they've got three or four guys at AAA who would be on most teams' major league roster. And with the rotation, that's the one part I'm a little leery with, just in terms of, if they suffer an injury, you don't really know what you have in Mike Clevinger yet. We haven't seen Trevor Bauer and Danny Salazar put together those full seasons that make you say, oh, wow, this rotation is going to be a force. But we know that potential is in there. And the lineup, I mean, if they're missing Michael Brantley, it seemed like they had plenty of options. They're missing Jason Kipnis. And, well, here's this kid, Yandy Diaz, who his biceps are the size of my chest. And he could fall out of bed and hit 350, it looks like. So, I mean, they've got depth. Certainly, things could crumble. Things can always go wrong. I remember a couple years ago when the Nationals got Max Scherzer, they were everybody's pick to win the World Series, and they didn't even win the division. So, things happen, but a lot would have to go wrong, I think, for the Indians to not win the division. And I think that way more so than the Tigers, a lot can go right for them to win it. I don't really buy into the Royals. I think if they get off to a slow start, they're going to become sellers at the deadline. And with the Tigers, they've got to stay healthy, and they aren't the same team they were a few years ago, where you looked up and down that lineup and you had no chance to catch your breath. They've got some holes now, and you know, they need everybody to stay healthy in the rotation and in the lineup, and it's just, it's a lot to ask. So I think a lot would have to go wrong for the Indians not to win it, and it's just, it's the way the Indians constructed this roster is, it's been really impressive.
Last thing, Zach, only because we're a little short on time, do the Indians not only win the division, which you just said that they will, do they repeat as American League champions? And if so, who will they face in the World Series?
Well, that's a good question. I struggle with this every year.
Red Sox look really solid in the East. Astros and Rangers, maybe a little bit of both. Maybe leaning toward the Astros. I don't know. In the American League West, wild cards, of course, were up for grabs. But I got to say, I mean, they I won't say prohibitive, but solid favorites here on March 31st. I think they ought to be roster-wise solid favorites to go back to the show.
Yeah, I picked the Cubs over the Red Sox, but I have no confidence in that. It's just a shot in the dark. I think I started with the Dodgers over the Red Sox. Then I switched to the Nationals over the Indians. I settled on the Cubs over the Red Sox. I mean, it's so impossible to predict what will happen in October. I think it's easy this year to pick the division winners.
I do, too.
I don't, and I think, of course, that means it's going to be like the Rockies and the Marlins. But
no, I mean, right. I mean, it's for me anyway, it's Red Sox, Indians, and Astros. And it's Nationals, and it's Cubs, and it's Dodgers, right? Those are your six division winners.
Yeah, I think there are like eight teams that are really good, and then there's a big separation between those teams and the rest of the league. And it's pretty simple. I mean, Boston, Cleveland, Houston, the Mets, the Nationals, Dodgers, Giants, and the Cubs. And I think if you would have asked at the start of the postseason last year to pick the combination of World Series participants, I don't know how many people would have said Cubs and Indians. And that was when it was narrowed down to 10 teams. So, you know, I've seen a lot of people get creative and get cute with it and pick some like wild card team or something like that. I mean, the Cubs are still really good. They won it all last year. They have Kyle Schwarber now. They have a lot of depth in every area. They're similar to the Indians. So, I picked them. No one has repeated since the Yankees did in 98, 99, and 2000. So I think we're due for that.
So there it is. Zach Meisel says the Indians are back. The Tigers are not maybe what they were a year ago, and it should be a Cubs over Red Sox, at least today, a Cubs over Red Sox World Series. Zach, it's going to be an awful lot of fun to watch from the very beginning. We look forward to more conversations with you throughout the season, and thanks always for spending the time with us.
I appreciate it, and I will be coming out with my annual list of haikus and poems about the teams, which is I always publish just to take the attention away from who I actually picked to win games. So.
I love those. It is so fun to read. I look forward to it, and I'll be looking for it. Thanks so much, Zach. Zach Meisel from the Northeast Iowa Media Group with thoughts on the Indians. It's a little bit of a baseball preview hour for us here on the Extravaganza. Coming up right after this, we're going to go to the northern side of the state line, and that would be up in Detroit. Anthony Fenech will join us with a look at what the Tigers can expect to be and what we can expect to see from them in the American League Central race after I tell you once again about the Masters starting on Thursday. That's right. The Masters is here, and it's a perfect time for you to launch your fantasy golf league or just to get into your first contest with the good folks at FanDuel.com. That's right. FanDuel now gives you a chance to enhance your golf experience if you're a big fan of the PGA Tour with fantasy golf. Here's what you do. You pick eight golfers for your team. You stay under the salary cap, you score points for their eagles, their birdies, their pars, and more. And there's a contest for just about everybody starting at $1. That's right. Watch your score live and win cash prizes. And, of course, we are talking baseball, too, as we just did with Zach Meisel, opening day Sunday. The Daily Fantasy Baseball is back. That means next Tuesday's $500,000 MLB Super Rally Contest is here with $100,000 going to the first-place winner. You know, over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. It's going to be so much fun. But join us for fantasy golf starting on Thursday with the Masters. To get started, here's what you do. New users get a combo, FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack. It's valued at up to $50, and you get it free. That's right, 5 free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. Just finish in the top half, and you win cash. To get your 5 free entries, go to FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button and enter the promo code France. That's FRANTZ. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France. Void where prohibited. We'll talk Tigers with Anthony.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we continue with our little baseball preview hour right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks to our friend Zach Meisel, who joined us to talk about the Indians. He says they will repeat as division champions, but he's picking the Red Sox to actually come out of the American League and get to the World Series. Now time to turn our attention to the Detroit Tigers. And for that, we turn to our friend Anthony Fennec, who covers those Tigers for the Detroit Free Press. Anthony, what's going on, my brother? How you feeling?
Bob, how you doing? Two more days. Spring training.
You just cannot wait, can you?
I cannot get on that plane, go to Chicago. The games start meaning a little bit more, just a little bit. But
are you more excited for the team because you know they're getting ready to play games that mean something, as you point out, or just because you want to get the heck out of Florida?
I'd say it's probably like 75% team, 25% getting out of Florida because it is 85 degrees here today. Very nice. Nice little breeze. I'm sure it's not like that up in Toledo or Detroit. No. So I'm about 75-25, but it's about time for the regular season.
Sorry. Yeah, but you know, all the beat writers I talk to, as much as they love the job that they get to go down to spring training, whether it's be in Arizona or Florida because of the weather, it's just 6 weeks straight away from home like that. It just, you know, it's like, God, I want my own bed. I want my own restaurants in my own neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. Or even if you're going to Chicago for the first series, you just want something different than what you've been in for the last 6 weeks. It's, you know, it's tough work you have down there. And in all seriousness, it really is a grind, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just different because, and I was actually just reading something online about the sleep schedule. I mean, we get up, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning here, and then right when you get into the regular season, you start the night game schedule, and it just throws your equilibrium out of whack a little bit. But yeah, it's time.
All right. So let's get into this a little bit now. I told you we just had our mutual friend Zach Meisel, and I'm sure you'll see him in many a press box throughout the season. He said that there's really little doubt that the Indians, with all of the arms that they have and everybody coming back healthy, you know, of course that's anything can change with injuries. You can't predict injuries. Like for example, JD Martinez is out now to start the season, right? For a 10-day DL, he's going to be for the start of the season.
He's probably safely going to miss the first month of the season.
First month of the season. Okay, so obviously you can't predict those things. So if everybody is healthy, Zach says, I think what most of the analysts across the country say, that the American League Central is going to belong to the Indians. The starting rotation is terrific, and my goodness, the bullpen, now that you have a full season of Andrew Miller, who can be used in so many different ways, the bullpen is terrific. You add Michael Brantley back, potentially fully healthy. He's an all-star. You add an accomplished all-star in 40-plus home runs and 100-plus RBIs every year in the last 5 years, Edwin Encarnacion. It's impossible to not pick the Indians. So my question to you is, not do you pick the Indians, where do you pick the Tigers?
I pick the Tigers second, and I agree pretty much with everything that my good friend Zach said. I think that the sorry, guys, I'm trying to walk down out of the music. I think it's pretty safe, in my opinion, that the Indians are going to win the division. I've soured on the Tigers a little bit since the start of spring training, just because I don't think that they have the requisite amount of starting pitching depth to get to the season. There's a lot of things that have to go right for this team. If they suffer a big injury in the starting rotation, top two or three guys, it's really, really going to hurt them. And already, like you said, they have JD Martinez on the shelf for about a month. So I definitely think it's the Indians' division to lose. And I actually think, Bob, that it's probably going to be like that for the next two or three seasons. I really think the Indians got something going on really good there. And then after this year, you know, I expect the Tigers to get into a bit of a youth movement. But I do think that they'll finish second. I do think they'll win about 83, 84 games. The Royals are the big wild card in the Central. It's going to be interesting to see how they shake out, but I think it'll be a little too late for the Tigers probably this season.
Is that 83 games enough for a wild card?
I don't think it's going to be. I think the American League is going to be a little bit stronger than people expect this year. So I don't think it's going to be enough for to get back to the postseason.
Okay, so Indians and Tigers in the American League Central. What about the rest of the league? A lot of the national folks, if they don't have the Indians going to the World Series, they do like Zach Meisel. They've got the Red Sox. Now, the West is a little less clear-cut in terms of the division champion. A lot of people say the Astros, but the Rangers are still very dangerous as well. So kind of taking all of that into consideration, who do you see winning the American League flag?
I see the Indians winning the American League flag, and I mean, to me, it comes down to, you know, I think the Indians and the Red Sox are the best teams in the AL. But look, I mean, they're out with David Price for a month, maybe longer. You don't know how that situation is going to turn out. And I just think the Indians have a much better bullpen, and that's the deciding factor to me. Because when you got guys like Cody Allen and Andrew Miller in that bullpen, and then Terry Francona is an X factor too. I mean, you're talking about one of the best managers in baseball. So I like the Indians in the AL again. I actually like them beating, I believe it was the Yankees in the American League Championship Series. I think the Yankees are going to surprise a lot of people this year. I think they have a really good team.
Wow, no kidding. That is a surprise to me. I feel like they're going to be one of the bottom half teams of the East, to be honest with you. I'm kind of a buyer on the Red Sox as well. Now, what about in the National League? I think the three division champions are fairly easy to pick. I think the defending champion Cubs are easily the best in the Central. I think the Nationals are easily the best in the East, and I think that the Dodgers are easily best in the West. The question is which of them is the best overall and is going to go to the show?
I think it's hard to pick against the Cubs. I mean, that's just such a loaded infield with the young position players that are just hitting their prime. They got good pitching again. For me, it's the Cubs, and when I make my preseason previews, I don't like sticking with the guys from the year before, but really the Cubs, I think their bullpen might be a little bit suspect, but they have really no reason to have me pick otherwise. I also think the Giants are going to beat the Dodgers in the West Division. I think the Giants are poised to have a very good season. So Giants and Cubs, for me, that's going to be the NLCS.
You are bucking some of the national trends here. You're going Giants over Dodgers, and you're going Yankees coming out of the American League East as well. That's very interesting. And fine, by the way, I think it should be a very good race out there. I just still think the Dodgers are far and away the better team, but the Giants are a very talented roster as well. So that means you're predicting a rematch of the World Series. Cubs and Indians yet again. Different result, or is it two in a row for the team that waited 108 years to get their first one?
Same result. I hate it. I hate picking the Cubs again, but same result for me. Like I said, I just think that they're the best team in baseball, so I got to kind of go with it, and we'll laugh at it, you know, 6-7 months ago from now, when all my predictions proved to be very, very untrue. But yeah, I got the Cubs going back to back.
Well, you know what? It's not a crazy thing. They are so deep. Their roster is among the best in baseball, if not the best, and it's all young. You know how you said you think the Indians are going to kind of be the team to beat in the American League Central for the next 2-3 years? I think the Cubs are the team to beat in baseball for the next 2-3 years, too. So there's nothing crazy about that prediction. Hey, I almost called you Zach. Thanks, Anthony Fenix, so much for the great work you always do, not only for the Free Press and online at freep.com. We read you every day, but anytime we get you on the radio, we appreciate that, too.
For sure, Bob. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Anthony Fenix joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, he says Tigers will finish second, but probably will not be enough for a wild card berth. Okay, we're going to shift gears here in just a couple minutes. We're going to go because this is, of course, the weekend of the Final Four, National College Basketball. I'm sorry, NCAA. You know what I'm trying to say. The March Madness tournament, of course, comes to a head tomorrow night. We've got the two semifinals and then the championship game on Monday. For a preview of that coming up in just a couple of minutes, we are going to talk with Alex Kirshner of SB Nation, college basketball writer. But first, before we do that, let me remind you of another chance to qualify for our Orlando Flyaway. That's right. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket has a chance for you and a guest to spend 4 days and 3 nights in Orlando, Florida to qualify. All you got to do is be the eighth caller right now to 866-240-1065. I'll qualify a new winner every single day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Extravaganza. Or you can register once a day online at 1065theticket.com. It's all brought to you by the beautiful Orlando Center Marriott, offer a world of possibilities, Allegiant Air, Shays Carpet, Premium Vapor, Country Hearth, and, of course, Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. All right, so we're going to get a quick time out here, come back and talk some Final Four to wrap up the final
Santa. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here hanging out with you. And lots of fun stuff, of course, going on this weekend. One of which, of course, is the Final Four. And despite some early round, not many upsets, it's kind of gotten shaken up a little bit as the tournament has gone along. A couple of very, very fascinating matchups to talk about. And we got somebody to talk about it with right now. Alex Kirshner, he is of SB Nation, one of the college sports and college basketball and football, for that matter, contributors over there at SB Nation. Alex, how you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Hey, I can't complain. It's fun tournament time. It's Final Four time coming up this weekend. And as you just heard me say, it's a tournament that we didn't have a lot of upsets at the beginning. Because of that, we had more as each round went on. And I love the dynamic of this. You have one blue blood left, you know, a classic program in Carolina, and then three newbies. I know technically Oregon's been there before, but that was the very first tournament in 1939, and there were only eight teams in the field. So I kind of am putting an asterisk next to that and saying there's actually three newbies to the Final Four, Gonzaga and South Carolina on the other side. How surprised, first off, before we get into the nitty-gritty of all this, Alex, how surprised are you that these are the matchups we have?
I mean, I think it's hard to ever be surprised by what the Final Four is because, you know, you need 64 teams to get knocked out, and there's a pretty good chance that any given team, even, you know, what I thought was maybe the best team in the field like this year with Villanova, there's a pretty good chance that any given team is not going to get there. I think North Carolina and Gonzaga being here obviously is not surprising. I don't think Oregon being here is that surprising. I didn't expect it myself, but I think they have they profile as a team that could win four games in the regional, and they did. And obviously South Carolina is the big surprise, and I did not see that one coming.
Nor did anyone else. I'm sure I'm amongst the legion of people who had Marquette in their brackets that have long since been destroyed, by the by, back in round one a couple of weeks ago. And let's start with that matchup. Gonzaga, South Carolina, it's the first one of the doubleheader, which, of course, you can hear all the coverage of the Final Four, both games and the title game coming up on Monday here on The Ticket, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. Let's start with that and talk about South Carolina. On the one hand, it's a power school that's a seven seed, but on the other hand, it had never been to an Elite Eight before, let alone a Final Four, and hadn't been to a Sweet 16 since the mid-1970s. Cinderella is not exactly the right word. We're all surprised, clearly, by what happens, but the run that they've gone on has been kind of impressive considering some of the teams they had to beat, headlined by Duke. With not really being able to technically classify that as a Cinderella or anything because of its status and seed in terms of conference, where does this line up in terms of some of the other surprising runs by power conference schools that maybe weren't that great in particular years? Where does this one stack up?
I think it's actually near the top. I mean, it's the thing is it maybe shouldn't have been as surprising as it has been because this defense is outstanding. One of the top two or three defenses, I think, in all of college basketball. Problem for them is that they're playing the best one in the national semifinal. But Frank Martin's a really good defensive coach. Their best player, Sindarius Thornwell, is also a great defender. So I don't know if we should be as shocked as we are. I count myself among that group. I mean, I was pretty surprised as this run continued. But, yeah, I think anytime an SEC school that's not Florida or Kentucky makes a deep tournament run, I guess LSU with Tyrus Thompson, Glenn Davis, that must have been that's the one that jumps to my mind as one that was pretty similar and felt similar. I guess that was 12 or 13 or so years ago now. You know, that comes to mind. I think you could look at, you know, the year a couple of years ago when Connecticut mounted a run from down in the seed line and got all the way to the Final Four and won a national title as similar, although it was maybe a bit more expected because it was Connecticut. But every year somebody's going to do something. Some team from a power conference that you don't expect is going to get probably at least the Elite Eight, and South Carolina managed to get farther than that, so good for them.
And to that end, I think part of the surprising thing, Alex, we're talking with Alex Kirshner. He is a college sports contributor to our good friends at SB Nation, doing a lot of tournament work, as of course that's what time it is in terms of college sports, obviously. What does it say about Ken Martin and his career? I read a fascinating article the other day. I think it was on CBSSports.com, but don't quote me on that. The point of the article was, man, South Carolina, it's partly luck here because they were able to get Martin in the first place because of how the fiasco at the end of his tenure with Kansas State, another program that he took to pretty decent lengths, one or two Elite Eights in his time there, if I'm not mistaken. What does that say about his overall job? We talk a lot about the various coaches. We're going to get to another one in this exact same matchup here in a few. But what does this say about Ken Martin in terms of being a head basketball coach now that he's done this with two overall programs that aren't exactly full big time. Like you mentioned, if you'd be surprised if there's anybody in the SEC unless it was Kentucky or Florida, and I'm in agreement with that. So where does this make Ken Martin stack amongst some of the coaches out there?
Well, I think he's a really good coach. You know, the thing that has always been consistent with what he's done, what he did at Kansas State and at South Carolina, is that he's improved his defenses a great deal over time. At Kansas State, I think it started in a little better place than South Carolina did. But he really has molded his teams to be really good at that. He's molded them to be aggressive on offense. They've always been good offensive rebounding teams. Those have been kind of some traits of Frank Martin teams that he's just managed to install at both of his stops. I think in 5 or 6 years at Kansas State, 5 years at Kansas State, and now 5 years at South Carolina. They've had some weaknesses. I mean, they for the most part have not been outstanding offensive teams, though they were sometimes decent at Kansas State and sometimes now. But part of the deal when you're coaching at Kansas State and then you're coaching at South Carolina is that you're not going to recruit the kinds of players that are going to allow you to be good at everything. You need to get guys who fit a mold that works for you. For Frank Martin, that's high-pressure defense, aggressive on the boards on offense, and finding shooters where you can. But, his South Carolina team this year and no other year, I mean, they've never had amazing offensive talent. They've never been great shooting teams. And he's just found guys who work for what he's installed in Columbia, and more power to him.
Yeah, I think it speaks a lot about how much of a quality coach Frank Martin is, and that what he was able to do. If anything, I view it as what he did at Kansas State was certainly not any kind of random fluke. That he may be not necessarily the elite group, but he may be in some of the upper echelons of coaches. Let's turn to the other side of this particular matchup, and there's a lot one can say about Gonzaga and all they've been able to do over the years with Mark Few up there, and what an outstanding coach and recruiter and thing that he's obviously been to turn a small school in a small conference. Let's never forget that the West Coast Conference without Gonzaga is as much of a one-bid league as the MEAC or something like that. And to finally get over the hump and make it to a Final Four, they've been to Sweet 16s, they've been to Elite Eights, they've been high seeds, they've even been a number one in previous tournaments, but to finally get over the hump and make it this far to their first ever Final Four, does this kind of put them in a more at least permanent mid-major to a viewed as a major program not playing in a big-time conference?
I think that to some extent, Gonzaga has already established itself as a blue chip program in college basketball. I think getting to the Final Four should be a bit of a status bump because it should quiet down some people who kind of cast Gonzaga as the mid major that can't win the big one, which, while factually accurate, maybe has never been entirely fair because it's hard to win NCAA tournaments. It's hard to get the Final Four. But yeah, I think that to the extent that you do need in college basketball some trophies on the trophy case beyond the WCC to be completely taken seriously, this has probably helped them a good deal. I think they were already recruiting at a pretty strong level. Zach Collins, their backup center, who has had a great season, one of the most efficient offense players in the country. He was a five-star recruit, I believe. Nigel Williams-Goss, who they brought in a few years ago from Washington on a transfer. He was a former McDonald's All-American. Maybe Collins was a four-star or five-star. But at any rate, they've recruited better than they used to, and I think they've kind of already mounted that leveling up. And this should kind of grease those wheels and help that continue.
Kind of a flip side question on that same kind of subject, if you will, though, is being that this is their first Final Four, despite what they've been able to offer on the court, their good defense and all the rest, is there any danger of Gonzaga maybe slipping up in the beginning of this game, or phrase another way, they're going to end up being happy to be there? Are they in any danger of that? Because I got to think sometimes that can happen to teams, but it feels like now that they've gotten over it, I actually don't think Gonzaga is going to necessarily have that particular problem in this one. But is that a possibility?
I think the reason it's a possibility that Gonzaga slips in general is that they're playing a team that profile somewhat similarly to West Virginia, which almost beat Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. You know, West Virginia, we call them Press Virginia because they play such a high-pressure defense. They're on you all the way up the court, and they've really kind of made that a cornerstone of their game. Gonzaga had a very difficult time with that defense, and South Carolina isn't quite West Virginia in that regard, but it's probably the closest thing you could find in this tournament. That was one of Gonzaga's worst games of the season. Gonzaga got through it, and it was impressive that they did. You know, South Carolina profiles similarly to that, and it wouldn't be too surprising if they struggled to score enough points to at least get comfortable.
And I think that's a good point. I don't think it'll be the, oh, we're happy to be here finally kind of thing. If anything, you're right. It's what South Carolina can do defensively that if, you know, they're not making some shots early on and South Carolina maybe gets a lead, then we might have them making something interesting. And so I definitely agree with that. We're talking with Alex Kirshner. He's one of the contributors for College Sports over on SB Nation. We're talking some Final Four, of which we'll have all the coverage for you, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One tomorrow here on the ticket. Let's move to the later game. You have Oregon 3 against North Carolina, the only true classic blue blood still alive. They're a one seed in the later game matchup. And you did mention, and I agree with that, there were some various brackets out there and experts who had Carolina maybe going this far, despite the fact that Kansas was in their particular region. But in general, this promises, I think, to be a very fun kind of matchup, even though Oregon, again, not necessarily a blue blood. They're a highly thought of power conference team. And then Carolina, back-to-back Final Four. As you mentioned, and I agree with that, it's hard to get to Final Fours, let alone back-to-back ones. What do you see happening in this one?
Hard to say. I think North Carolina is rightfully considered the favorite. You know, both teams have pretty big strengths that I could see counteracting one another. I mean, Gonzaga has, on the inside, particularly Jordan Bell, who was just outstanding in the Elite Eight, and they've had some injuries in their front court, so they're not entirely at full strength. But North Carolina's greatest strength is its offensive rebounding. The Heels are not, you know, an incredible shooting team, despite having as much talent as they do. They do get a lot of second chances because they're crashing the glass ferociously for 40 minutes. I think that if Oregon can play a little bit of box-out defense, which sometimes has been an issue for them. They're not a terrific defensive rebounding team, but they do block a lot of shots, and they do have some athletes down low. I think that Oregon could win the game. I think what's going to be a problem for Oregon is if they can't stop Kennedy Meeks, they can't stop Isaiah Hicks from just mopping up every missed shot and letting North Carolina shooters take two, three opportunities at getting the ball in the basket. If that happens, I don't really see it for Oregon.
What's an X factor for you in this one?
It could come from anywhere. That's a pretty broad answer. I think that Oregon has a couple of guys who have the potential offensively to really take over a game that, you know, for whatever reason, the tournament, I mean, it's been Tyler Dorsey, who we've talked about so much, who's been one of the stars of the tournament and a great scorer. You can't call Dylan Brooks an X factor. I mean, arguably the best player in the Pac-12, and he's been good in the NCAA tournament. But I think you could see somebody like Dylan Ennis, who is, you know, a great secondary. I wouldn't even call him a secondary piece for them. I mean, he's a starter. He's extremely talented. He's been in the NCAA tournament before, including with Villanova a couple of years ago. He doesn't take a ton of shots for Oregon, but he's a pretty good player. Able to make shots from pretty much anywhere on the floor, decent foul shooter. I think you could see somebody like that for Oregon, on Oregon's side, somebody who's not Jordan Bell, somebody who's not Tyler Dorsey, not Dylan Brooks. If they could get a big scoring night from one of those guys, and they've got guys who can do it, I think that would change the dynamics of the game considerably.
Put your predictor cap on for me. Who do you like in each of these games? Who are we seeing Monday night, and who would be your champion at this point?
North Carolina Gonzaga, I would think, in the title game. I mean, obviously, I don't know anything, but I would think North Carolina Gonzaga. And I had Gonzaga winning it all at the beginning. I will stick with them, but again, I mean, you know, nobody really knows anything, right? I mean, anything could happen.
No, that's absolutely true. My brackets were, for example, shot long ago. I had a Duke-Carolina rivalry title game, and obviously that's way far away from happening. Pretty much any pick you would make, I think, at this point out of these four would be something that's acceptable. And, hey, you give us a 1v1 matchup in the title game, and I would enjoy watching a Carolina-Gonzaga game either way when we get to Monday night. Alex, thanks so much for the time. Thanks so much for the insight. Enjoy the Final Four this weekend, and we'll catch up with you down the line at some point. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
That is Alex Gershner. He's a contributor to SB Nation College Sports. He does a lot of college football, but right now they've been having him do a whole bunch of college basketball, and it is such a fascinating Final Four. Mike Miller on Drive Time coming up next, and then we'll recap all the fun coming up on Monday. See ya.
We are ESPN 106.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.